Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. There's been a flurry of diplomatic activity in the Eastern Mediterranean over the last month and a half, with exploratory talks between Athens and Ankara kicking off, the United Nations Secretary General calling for the resumption of talks on the Cyprus problem, and Greece signing key strategic agreements with countries like France and Israel. In view of these and other developments, Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis visited Cyprus and Israel in rapid succession on Monday. Vasilis Nethos, Kathy Merini's diplomatic and defense editor, joins us to discuss Prime Minister Mitsotakis' visit to Cyprus and Israel, the upcoming UN initiative to kick off Cyprus talks, and more. Vasili, welcome back to The Greek Current.
Thanks for having me.
Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis was in Cyprus today for talks with President Anastasiadis in an effort to coordinate positions and tactics ahead of the informal five-party summit that's going to be held in New York under the auspices of the United Nations next month. What's the view from Athens and Nicosia on these upcoming talks? How will both countries approach them?
Well, earlier this morning, Prime Minister Mitsotakis and President of Cyprus Anastasiadis met in Nicosia, and they agreed that the framework that Athens and Nicosia are working in is the one that has been already set by the United Nations and the international law. So it is bi-zonal, bi-communal federation, and no real move from that position. The meeting is important because, as you already said, there's going to be a meeting of the five parts under the auspices of the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, probably early in the month of March. Well, just to give you some extra input, it seems that some parties of this meeting have been raising issues on the spot, like if, you know, the state of New York is appropriate to hold a meeting like that for COVID reasons, but this is something, of course, that will be solved in the coming hours and days. And the main problem that Greece and Cyprus must actually face in the following weeks is that Turkey and the Turkish Cypriot leader is having a very stern position about a solution that may lead to a permanent frontier between the two communities on the island. So something that will be close to a two-state solution. Mr. Mitsotakis and Mr. Anastasiadis clarified today that they're not going to accept this kind of solution and we are sticking in the UN framework. But I guess that in the next month, that we'll have to see what the main actors that are going to participate in the 5+1 summit, probably in New York, we're going to see what the actors are going to imply. I think that we will see what will happen with the Cyprus issue after the 5+1. We'll see if there is space for a conference on the Cyprus issue that would lead to a solution.
Given Turkey's position that you just stated, that of a two-state solution, and the hard line that the Turkish Cypriot leader Ersin Tatar has taken as well, is there any optimism that these talks can go anywhere?
Well, I think, you know, this is a part of a broader diplomatic game. So Turkey and the Turkish Cypriots are really coming in hard. To my point of view, the very tough posture that Ankara has on the Cyprus issue also has to do with internal political reasons. We must remember that in the last 2 or 3 years, Erdogan is having a very strong nationalist element influencing his policies. You know, it's not only the Aegean and Cyprus, it's also Syria, it's also Nagorno-Karabakh in Azerbaijan, it's also Libya. There are a lot of fronts that are open. To some, you know, nationalist players in Turkey, what has been happening during the last couple of months, that, let's say, easing of the tensions in the Aegean and the Eastern Mediterranean have led to a conclusion that probably, you know, Turkey is taking a more constructive posture. But we should remember that Erdogan is governing the country with a far-right extremist like the Grey Wolves leader, Devlet Bahçeli. So he has to keep the balances, and this is why they have a very tough posture on the Cyprus issue. I would say that what is very important and we should always keep in mind is that back in July 2017, the five parts, you know, the two communities and the three guarantor powers in Crans Montana, Switzerland, stopped the negotiation at a certain point. Turks and Turkish Cypriots have a very different approach on what is the acquis of the Crans Montana. Because right now, officially, UN says that the framework of official talks after the 5+1 would be where we left from. So Greece and Cyprus and the Turkish Cypriots and Turkey, those two sides have a very different comprehension, a very different understanding on where the talks on Crans Montana in Switzerland stopped in the summer of 2017. So I would say we should wait for the 5+1 on March and we'll see.
Last week, Dominic Raab, Britain's foreign secretary, traveled to Cyprus, and he called for flexibility ahead of this summit on the Cyprus problem. What do you make of his statements, and what role do you expect the UK to play?
Well, UK's positioning by the foreign secretary, Dominic Raab, is very important. I should say that he traveled to Nicosia. He met, with President Anastasiadis. He met with a Turkish Cypriot leader. He talked on the phone with his Turkish counterpart, Mevlut Çavuşoğlu, and he also met with Nikos Dendias in London. So he had a full set of talks with all the players on the Cyprus issue. Now, I think that flexibility, if I was to interpret what flexibility actually is about, I would say is about the talks between the two communities. You know, the Cyprus talks have, let's say, two main frameworks in which they take place. One that is about security and guarantees, and this is the part that, United Kingdom, Greece and Turkey have a stake as guarantor powers since 1960. And then there is that bicommunal framework, which is about, rules of governance and how the country itself is going to work after a possible unification. So I think that what Mr. Raab meant by the term of flexibility is that they would be open in any agreement between the two communities that may be a little bit out of the very strict interpretation of the UN framework. I wouldn't know what this is, but I should say that it is probably about the way, the Cypriots form not only their government, but how they will, let's say, split power on the island between the two communities. That's how I would interpret it.
Vasily, I want to move us to Israel, where Prime Minister Mitsotakis traveled today as well. He worked to lay the groundwork for deals on tourism and additional agreements in the defense and tech sector. What can you tell us about his meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu?
Well, it seems that the two countries, first of all, signed this accord to ease travel restrictions. And I think that this is mainly because one of the biggest religious feasts of Judaism is somewhere in mid-April. So Greece wants those Israelis that will travel on April to travel in Greece. And since, Israel is moving in a very fast pace of vaccinating its population, we would want to have them here. And I think that part of that agreement has some details about, Israelis having the ability to fly in six different airports, I think. It's Athens, Thessaloniki, Rhodes, Santorini, Kerkyra, and Heraklio in Crete. So one thing is tourism. The second one that actually came out of the blue, we didn't know it, was the agreement of having joint research to develop an experimentary cure for people that are sick with COVID disease. It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu made this offer to Prime Minister Mitsotakis. He agreed, and we will have probably joint research team of Greek and Israeli doctors, of Greek and Israeli scientists trying to develop that cure, which is a further indication that the two countries can work in other sectors other than tourism or defense, which is a very important sector too. And the third thing I would like to say about the meeting of Mitsotakis and Netanyahu today is that it is also a statement that the two countries are working side by side and they're not going to give up that strategic partnership that they have been building in the last 12 years for nothing.
In a separate development, Vasily, but one that is linked to the broader tensions in the Eastern Mediterranean and Greece's efforts to boost its defense capabilities, Greece's first upgraded F-16 Viper jet will land on Wednesday at the aerospace facility in Fort Worth, Texas, for final tests. You wrote about this last week. What does this tell us about the status of the upgrade of Greece's F-16 fleet? And is everything on track?
What you're saying is very important. Right now, as we speak, the program is on track. We're talking about the modernization of 84 F-16s into a Viper configuration. The first F-16 flew on Thursday afternoon, and it's very indicative that it flew from the same base that four French Rafales were also operating from in the context of a joint exercise with Hellenic forces. So, things are moving very quickly in terms of Air Force. And before that first F-16 Viper left from Belgium and then to Fort Worth, Texas, the second one has already been in the factories in Tanagra of Hellenic Airspace Industries to get configured into Viper. So right now we are on track. If Hellenic Airspace Industries want to make and deliver 84 F-16s by 2027, they have to produce, they have to deliver 12 aircrafts every year. We're going to see how this will happen, but right now the omens are good.
Vasily, Greece is also looking to upgrade its navy, and they're studying proposals from France, from the United States, and from the Dutch. Can you give us an update on this process as well?
It's nice you're asking, because you are hitting the news as it comes out of the oven, if I may say. On Tuesday and Thursday, the French and the Americans are going to present their final, the latest proposals for the Hellenic Navy frigate. In the case of France, this is the Bellara frigate. And in the case of the United States, the proposal is about the multi-missile surface combatant that has been developed by Lockheed Martin. What has been happening in the last few weeks, and it is very interesting, has to do with a third proposal. That it's a Spanish proposal that is backed by U.S. material, if I may say. The Spanish are building the F-110 frigate. It's a big ship. Hellenic Navy has never had such a big ship. It's close to 6,500 tons. I mean, the current Hellenic Navy's frigates are a third lighter than this. But the armaments and all the systems on the ship are U.S. manufactured and U.S. developed. I should say that the previous configuration of that ship that already serves in the Spanish Navy also has integrated the Aegis air defense system. So let's say these are the three proposals that have been discussed this week. I should also note that there is a Dutch proposal on the table for the Sigma frigates. Also a British, a UK proposal about the Type 31 vessels they built. And some time ago, there was a German proposal as well. So it is, six proposals. I would say that this week is very important because the staff at the Ministry of Defense, the political leadership, will meet the representatives of the companies and the countries that are proposing for the next frigate of the Hellenic Navy. It is a very complicated process because Greece is not only asking for the building of four brand new ships, but also the modernization of four MEKO-class, Hydra-class frigates of the Hellenic Navy, and the procurement or the lease of a ship that will serve as an interim solution until the first ships are built. The cost of the program is 5 billion euros. So it's a very significant program in terms of the Greek budget. And everyone wants to see it moving quickly and be the best that it can be for the capabilities of the Hellenic Navy and the role it wants to play in the East Mediterranean in the following years.
Vasily, thanks for joining us again on The Greek Current. Always great speaking with you.
Thank you.
In other news, protests over the appointment of a ruling party loyalist as the head of Boğaziçi University in Turkey show no signs of abating, even as the government continues to detain and jail students. Beyza Buldag became the 10th student to be imprisoned in connection with the demonstration for allegedly creating a WhatsApp group on the protests. The protests are the biggest since the Gezi demonstrations that swept across Turkey in the summer of 2013. An Al Monitor report notes that Erdogan is keen to draw parallels between Gezi and the unrest at Boğaziçi in a bid to tar both with the same conspiracy-drenched brush. The government labeled the Gezi protests as a Western-inspired plot to overthrow Erdogan and criminal proceedings against the alleged perpetrators, mostly academics and human rights activists, continue to this day. Finally, Greece and Israel signed an accord on Monday to ease travel restrictions to Greece for Israelis with proof of COVID-19 vaccination, a move Athens hopes will support its bid to use vaccination certificates to save its battered tourism sector. Today's deal to mutually recognize those vaccination certificates was signed during a visit by Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis to Jerusalem, during which Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu noted it would allow travel without any limitations or self-isolation. Mitsotakis says that he expects this initiative with Israel to be a trial run for what can be done with other countries. Tourism, which accounts for about a fifth of the Greek economy and employs 1 in 5 workers, collapsed last year as the pandemic gutted revenues to 4 billion euros from 18 billion in 2019. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.